For people that don't know you, just to go backwards, not met you before, wondering, who's this guy?
God, that was a bad intro, right? He said what? He does what? No, man, I'm turning this off.
Richie Brave is?
Presenter, broadcaster, kind of, I guess, personality.
Mm-hmm.
Previous work is community focused.
Okay.
So I did a lot of like rehabilitative focused work, cognitive behavioral therapy rooted work in the community and stuff. So just like there's lots of different things about me, I think. Yeah. But presenter, broadcaster, I'd say is probably where I'm at now.
Okay, cool. I'm going to come back to all of that.
Yeah.
But Richie Brave enjoys
music. See with music, some people like music,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love music. I'm obsessed.
Yeah.
The way I react to music sometimes, people are like, brother, are you good? Yeah, because your eyes are wide. I'm just ranting about this song. And I'm like, listen to this. Music for me is just, it's embedded directly into my soul. Yeah. I love it. And food.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
Listen.
Yeah, man.
Listen.
Food is like my sixth love language.
Yeah.
Like, easily. It's favorite cuisine?
Now you're asking. Guyanese, probably.
That's your background.
I'm Guyanese, right? Innit? So.
Both parents?
Yeah, my mum's actually Burmese Indian. She's Indo-Burmese.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my mum was born here, but my nan came here as a refugee in the 50s.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what's the Guyanese like heritage dish?
Pepper pot.
Okay.
So we like, it's hard to explain. It's made with something called cassa reap.
Okay.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, and it's like really dark brown and it just tastes beautiful. It's just beautiful.
What is it? Is it a curry? Is it like a soup?
It's
is
not
it like
a curry. It's
roti
like a
vibe. You have it with that?
No, you have it with rice, but it's like a, some people have it with roti, but it's not, it's like a stew kind of thing. It's like a stew. But then also dal puri, so we like roti. And pine tarts and cook up rice and I love my Guyanese food. Yeah. I love it.
Is there anywhere in this country you can get Guyanese food?
Yes. South London.
Okay.
Well, there's I want to big up Auntie Faye every time. She's in Elephant and Castle. Okay. She originally had a hut.
Okay.
And then when they knocked down the shopping centre,
mm-hmm,
they moved there into the containers, like the, you know those
containers
get converted, like the metal shipping containers. Yeah. They moved that into one of them in Elephant and Castle. Oh, okay. Still, she's still there. Her food's beautiful. Mm. She's from the same part of Guyana that my family's from, which is Buxton.
Okay,
a lot of people are from Georgetown because that is the Georgetown is like the main city.
Okay,
but we're from Buxton and we're proud Buxtonians. My family. But yeah, she's there. Her Guyanese food is beautiful. There's also a place called Umanayana. I think it's Umanayana. I think I'm pronouncing that properly. That's in Brockwell.
Okay.
Brockwell Park.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another place in Penge. Can't remember the name of that. Good food or something. It's nice there as well. Mm. But I usually go see Auntie Faye because she's local.
Yeah.
And she's everyone's aunt. Everyone loves her.
I love that. And I think that's good to know, you know, because I think generally when we talk about Caribbean food in this country, we actually talk about Jamaican food.
Which is, I mean, it's very high on my list as well, controversially.
Yeah, me too. But it's also good to know where other Caribbean delicacies can be found.
Because when people
think about Caribbean, they naturally think about Jamaican food.
Yeah, because I mean, we got a Bajan, some from South London.
Yeah.
There's a Bajan shop in Nunhead. I think it's still there.
Nunhead, where's that?
Okay. It's between New Cross and Peckham and Forest Hill, like Broccoli. It's kind of like in between all of that. But yeah, there's a Bajan food spot there. Obviously, you have Roti Jupa, which is Trinidadian. Yeah, you see? They're dotted around, you know?
We got one in Finsbury Park, and let me tell you something.
The roti's good, isn't it?
Hitting.
Yeah, and the doubles.
Hitting.
The doubles.
Oh my gosh, hitting.
Oh gosh. I like the food.
Hitting. Honestly. Oh, no, I'm actually
hungry.
Have
we come here to chat about food?
Oh, I'm actually hungry now.
Sounds like a new podcast.
It does. Wow, no, I could really eat that. And I've not eaten. I'm sorry. My brain has gone to like
being grapes.
Being grapes instead.
No worry.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So back to your professional career.
Yeah.
Talk us through the journey. Where have you always been someone that wanted to be in front of the camera? Has that been something you wanted as a child?
Oh, it's so interesting you should say that. So I did acting and stuff when I was really young.
Was that Sylvia young?
Interestingly, there's a story behind that as well. Okay. I got offered a part scholarship to Sylvia Young when I was young. I was about 8 years old. And we couldn't afford it. So I could have gone to stage school, but we couldn't afford, like, we were a poor family, you know what I mean? So I couldn't afford to go. I went to community focus once. So I went to a place called Joavel, or Joavel, depending on how you pronounce it. That was in Broccoli, big up Lena every time. I also went to a place called Second Wave Youth Art Centre in Deptford. A lot of people have come through there.
Okay.
Do you know Shingi from the Noisettes? She came through there. There's enough people like throughout the time who've kind of come through there. And I also went to the Albany. So I did some work at the Albany, which is in Deptford. So I always did like that little stage stuff.
Yeah.
And then I went into computers because I was also a computer maniac when I was young. I was a nerd. Right. Okay. Music and computers was my thing.
Yeah.
I didn't even have time for sports or nothing.
Did you
used
to make music or did you?
I started making music when I was young. Okay. Yeah. But I used to write computer programs when I was like 4 or 5. I was one of those like gifted children. Not so much now. But I was in all the gifted programs and stuff at school and that. Like, I had a reading age of like a 13-year-old when I was like, really young. Got moved up in school like 3 years.
Sick.
So when I was meant to go into year 3, I think I went into year 6. I think that's how it
went. So you didn't do year 4 and 5 at all?
No. They moved me straight up into year 6.
Wow.
So it says a lot about when I was young. I don't know so much now. The Ravens probably eating out my mind. But yeah, so performing arts was something I did. Quite a bit as a youth, and then I studied computers in college, and then I went into the probation service.
Interesting journey.
Yeah, but I was a youth worker from when I was young as well. So from my 16th birthday, I got kicked out of both colleges I went to.
Because?
A little bit rough.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I was getting into trouble.
Not
with the teachers or nothing, but getting into arguments, fights and stuff, and didn't really get on with some of the people in the first college I went to, and then the second college was, I'm someone, if I don't like something, I'm out. I'm gone.
So you're quite cut and dry.
Cut and dry. But they didn't really give me an option. I got kicked out. So computers kind of fell by the wayside, and then I didn't even remember applying for a job in probation. I went into admin. So I went into admin, and then at 21... I became one of the youngest program facilitators. I was like 21 years old, running groups around. It was like alcoholism, general, like substance misuse, general offending, drink driving, all of that. And then I specialised in domestic abuse when I was 23.
Wow. That, if I think back to when I was 23 and 21, when I think back to when I was 21, I had just come back from a girls' holiday in Miami. Getting drunk, falling over.
I'm still doing all of that, you know.
And doing that madness.
Yeah. I'm still doing all of that.
So, at that age, are there some things taking your mind back now?
Yeah.
What are some of the things you remember most about those experiences and the people that you met through those experiences?
As in working in the service. Yeah. I'm from Enns. I grew up in New Cross, Blue Borough, through and through, born and bred. Very proud of being
South Londoners are so proud.
There's so much amazing things coming out of Lewisham Borough. So many people who are just amazing, doing fantastic things. I mean, Fecky for one, you know what I mean? So, you know, like, when I was working in probation, the people coming through probation were my cousins and people I grew up with. I maybe didn't know them, but you know each other's faces from around the ends, you know what I mean? So, you know, I think there were things that I learned before I even went in there. So remember, I'm rehabilitative. So I come in from a rehabilitation perspective.
Right.
I was doing group work rather than the enforcement side of things. And for me, it was just a constant reminder that we're all human beings and we can have similar starting points in life, but paths take us in different directions. Yeah. So it really frustrates me when you hear people talk about criminals and these scary, dangerous people. Actually, they're just people like everybody else. They're me, they're you, they're our families, they're our cousins, they're our parents, they're our uncles and aunties. We're not separated from people who commit crimes. Most of us have committed something and just never been caught.
And I think that's... I think that's really important to note in terms of the pathway piece.
Yeah.
I think that in speaking to that point, the path that people take, do you feel like it's nature, nurture?
It's nurture.
Or,
it's this,
or
it's,
combination of both.
I think it's societal. I think it's, I think in saying that it's nature, maybe there's things that you have more of a propensity to get involved in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I wouldn't like to say.
Mm.
But I think in saying that it's nature removes the responsibility from society that creates these environments that allow these things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So when you look at people who commit crime, they have this thing called criminogenic need, right? So it's the things that lead into you committing crime. So it might be lack of education. Mm-hmm. It could be being ostracized socially, so social isolation.
Mm-hmm.
It could be substance misuse.
Mm-hmm.
It could be trauma from childhood.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of different things that land people in particular situations. And I'm not saying that people don't make a choice. Of course they do.
Mm-hmm.
And people do some heinous things. But actually, it's far more complex than good and bad.
Yeah.
It's not these people good, those people bad. That's not how life works.
Mm.
That's far too black and white.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's grey, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
But how do you marry that with the argument of people that say, well, you know, their parents, their parents should have been taking care of them. How come why weren't their parents at home doing this or helping them with that? And that's why they're out on the street, and that's why this is happening to them. And this
well,
is why
are they, why are their parents not at home?
Yeah, that's the question I want to get to.
Because quite often we live in a society where parents are having to go out and work to keep a roof above their children's heads.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that involves night work, so they can't be there.
Yeah.
So if they're not at work, then you're a benefit scrounger and you don't do anything and you're just sitting at home all day. And then when you do work, you're not there for your children.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really hard balance
chicken
to have,
and egg.
You know? Yes, chicken and egg. So, but again, that's one answer to something that's very multifaceted and complicated. There's no one answer to this. There
mm-hmm.
are a number of different reasons why people find themselves in a particular position.
Yeah, and I think community is so important. And I think you, as much as I do to a degree subscribe to the statement around you are the company you keep, I also think that you are what you eat also. And by eat, I don't just mean like what we actually consume, but what we consume. And I think that merge of like the company you keep and what you eat, depending on which one is more fruitful, no pun intended, but kind of, can lead you down a really destructive or progressive path.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the company you keep and you are what you eat, taking yourself back to like
taking yourself back to like
25. So you've gone through the probation piece, 21, 23. Now you're at 25.
Still there.
It's still there.
Still working.
Okay, cool. So yeah. What did your life outside of work look like?
I was a raver. Okay. Raver.
What raves are you at?
Yellow.
Oh my gosh, you were Yellow.
Yeah, Persona. I was in all of them raves.
Oh my
house
gosh,
raver,
we were over
know?
There then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We
yeah,
were
definitely.
Over there then.
Southwark weekend of twice a year.
Oh my gosh, we were over there.
Yeah, that was me. I was like house hunting, big up Music Man every time.
Oh my gosh, you were over there. Were you at Till 2?
Yeah, of course I was.
Oh
you know
gosh,
Jessica
you
Rabbit
there?
As well, the
yeah.
DJ. That's my good friend, Kemi Yoshi now. Big her up every time.
Wow.
I was out.
He was over
DJ
he was
NG,
over there.
That's my
wow.
boy too. I was on the scene. On
wow.
the scene. That was me, like 25.
I very rarely meet other people, like Ramel London, big up Rem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's
yeah.
like
every
my
time.
House raver. Like
yeah,
whenever
yeah, yeah.
there's a house rave, it's her and I because
yeah, yeah.
no one else in my friendship group likes house as much as me.
I expect an invite.
And you're our third person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm coming.
Because there's no one else that loves it as much as I do. Like, most music genres, most people, when they hear house that don't love house, all they hear is like, unts, unts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They don't understand that it's like melodic
oh,
and soulful
just, oh.
and like tasty.
And spiritual.
And spirit.
Like,
that
when
is
you're in a
word.
House rave and that beat is going through and your eyes are just closed,
that's
it's like,
it's so
you know.
Personal
Listen.
And it feels so like... Euphoric.
And it was before the shuffling.
Absolutely.
Before
Absolutely.
It was skanking.
It was traveling. It
yeah,
was
yeah, yeah,
Soul
yeah, yeah.
Fever. It
yeah,
was
yeah, yeah.
all of those tunes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It was that era.
Yo, I'm reliving right now. Oh,
and I'm like this.
Yeah, I love it.
In a festival, I'm cool, but inside, I just feel like oh,
that,
it's too
but
loud.
But also, I come up through dancehall as well, so okay. like loud
yeah,
horns
yeah,
and that
yeah,
inside
yeah,
the
yeah,
rave.
Yeah, yeah.
I just
cultural,
love
yeah.
when I'm out. I love noise, just noise. Even
yeah.
like amapiano. Like the whistles and
yeah.
that, yeah, that's me.
Really,
that's me.
I haven't
love
quite
it.
Got to amapiano yet, you know.
I love it.
I don't know if I don't love it yet.
I love it.
What do you love about it?
I will say this, yeah. I'm not trying to be that guy on that. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
So basically, Amapiano, I've probably been following Amapiano since 2019.
Okay.
Like before the pandemic, mm-hmm. right? So, and like the Amapiano race I was going to back then, full of South Africans that were coming for the music and the tunes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Amapiano scene, some of it's still sick. Some of it is like guys coming to look for girls with big nyash.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even like the music. You're just coming
yeah.
and bare attitude in the rave. Mm-hmm. I mean, house turned a bit like that at some
That's
point.
That's what I mean. Yeah, you know what I mean?
But we're like from the end, so it doesn't yeah. really mean that much, but it does create this atmosphere sometimes.
Mm.
But like initially when I came to Amapiano, it was very South African heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I'm glad to see so many different people enjoying it now. Yeah.
That is what I like
about
it,
it's just soulful.
Say.
The ghetto side of Amapiano, I just love.
I that, must say
those nasty bass lines.
Yeah, that I must. that aesthetic of that, it's really drawing so many people
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I love it.
That is what my hope for house had always been.
Yeah,
is that like it would draw people to me in my mind. The melody and lyrically, I was hoping that it would do that because I'm yet to hear a house song that isn't about like a real life issue. Not to say that other music isn't about real life issues, but in a different way. Like it's about heartbreak. It's about love. It's about enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
It's about having a good time. It's about being with people. It's all
being
of these
abandoned.
Things. Yeah, it's like
I've been looking for my baby. Oh, this is a music podcast
it
now.
Is, it
welcome,
is.
Welcome.
Welcome, guys, to Richie and Candice.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, I so 25 years raving.
That was 25, raving. 26, 27, 28, raving.
Yeah.
I've not stopped raving now.
Yeah, I do love a good step out.
Yeah, I'm a drum and bass raver as well.
Okay.
Proper drum and bass raver.
So you're at Garage Nation,
I'm at Garage Nation sometimes, back to 95 as
okay,
well.
Okay,
but also like Hospitality.
Okay.
That's like proper drum and bass, metalheads,
okay.
all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, I love drum and bass.
Mm, okay, no, this is actually a music podcast. So would you say your music taste is not limited to, but like if you were to put it on a plate, is it that sound?
I like stuff. My friends always say that I like music that's hard and smooth. Like the kicks are like boom, boom, boom.
Mm.
Very like in your face, bam, bam.
Yeah.
But there's something really like smooth
soft
underneath
it. Yeah.
That's what I like about music. But
yeah,
cross genre. I like everything really. I'm a music enthusiast, but music that is rooted or has its history in black music is usually where I'm at.
Mm.
There's something about that drill, those sliding bass lines. I think one of the great examples of that is Dede by Unknown T.
I don't know.
Rise up the thing and bow. There.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That that bass line is so smooth and his voice is so smooth and then that kick comes on the top.
Yeah.
It's just I love drill music for that. Drill gets a bad rap.
Yeah, it does.
But that production, there's just something about those bass lines sliding. It's just
yeah, no. Now you said the song. No.
Yo,
yeah.
Listen.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. Yeah. Anyway, I know you're not here to talk about music. Sorry.
No, I love it. I love it. It gives a temperature of like who you are outside of what the world knows you to be.
Yeah,
so when did broadcasting and presenting come in?
Yeah. Okay. So that was the question. That's the original.
Is that
what
I asked originally?
That's where we was.
Really?
How did I get into it? I think. Where did it start?
Maybe.
And then I said, I started doing it when I was young.
Then you said
stage school, all of that kind of stuff.
Music. Yeah. Down the rabbit hole.
See. See, probation is part of that, right? So they teach you motivational interviewing, how to have conversations with people, how to ask people the right questions,
mm-hmm.
to get the information you need and for them to get the understanding that they need and mm-hmm, all of that. Mm-hmm. So I literally just picked all of that up and moved it along into podcasting
mm-hmm.
and interviewing. So I became a presenter for BET.
Yes.
I did a little bit of podcasting before, like on people's podcasts and stuff. But my career really come up through social media.
Okay.
Being on Twitter and just voicing my opinions and kind of just being myself.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky because you asked me that question in mm-hmm. the beginning. I've never had to be someone else.
Mm.
All the opportunities I get are based on the skills that I've had throughout my life
mm-hmm.
and just being who I am as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And people who rate me, I don't like to say fans. I don't think I've got fans. I have people who rate me, right?
Mm.
The people who rate me because I am myself.
What do you think causes people to not be themselves?
I think it's difficult. Sometimes it's a grift. So people want to make bank and they don't really believe the things they're saying, so they become that way. Sometimes I think who they really are is shouted out of them or bullied out of them by people. I think sometimes people want to retain things for themselves. And I think we spoke about that before we even started recording. There are a number of things in my life I'm not going to give to the world. That's me. That's my stuff, you know?
So
I think there are some people are scared to be themselves. I think there are a number of different reasons why people don't bring them their whole selves. And we see the backlash, the fear. You can see that. You say something that's a little bit off, you get dragged.
Yes.
No one wants to get dragged.
And dragged forever.
Forever and ever and ever. Ain't you that person in 2009 that said...
Yeah, that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
But you said something just now that caused me to... Now I need to go back to what you just said. You said something that just now that made me think... Oh, it's completely lost out of my brain. People are scared. Ah, that's what it is. But people don't deserve... All of you. Brené Brown, she's like one of my favourite people ever. She often says, like, words to the effect of, not everybody deserves to hear your story.
Yeah.
And I really resonate with that. But I think there's a sweet spot between not everyone deserves to hear your story, but knowing that if everybody does, there's more chance of somebody being able to glean something from it that, like, changes their life. In you being more of yourself... Can you remember a time where you've said something to someone and their response felt like, wow, like that's so basic to me, but wow, that seems so really...
That happens a lot to me, actually. Something that just seems really simple to... Are you saying, like, if I've said something and people...
Yeah,
that happens a lot. Like, just me, a concept maybe that I think of and people are like, rah, I never thought of it like that. I remember once... Being in a club, this happens to me enough. People come to tell me their life stories in a club. So some...
The music's going.
Yeah, and I'm in the quiet bit.
So we're in the club now.
The music's going, but I've gone to sit down for a little bit. So sitting down by myself, and there's these two women next to me having a conversation about her boyfriend and some of the issues that she's got going on in their relationship. I'm kind of earwigging, but not. So I'm just on my phone and they're talking. I'm dipping in and out. Anyway, at the point I dipped out, not listening... One of the women was like, oh, listen, we want to ask your opinion on something. So the woman, she kind of explained what was going on with her boyfriend. And I said, I want to ask you a really personal question. And it's quite traumatic and triggering. Can I ask you the question? Do you mind? Because you've given me something and I can't unhear what I've heard. She said, yeah, fine. I asked her something quite personal about maybe something she had or hadn't experienced. She said, yeah, actually, I have experienced that. And I said, so from what I hear, your issue with your boyfriend sounds like the experience is this, it's made you feel like that, you might have experienced this. And I was like, boom, 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 boom. What do you think? Her eyes welled up. And she was like, yo, listen, I have never heard someone break down my life like that to me and made me think about something like that. It was something that seemed so simple to me. But in order to be able to break it down and gently give it to her, not, I think it's this, what do you think? But gently asking her the question, are you okay with me asking you? This is what I think it is.
Okay.
Here you go, do with it what you will. And maybe moving her forwards, but it was something that felt really simple to me. And I have those experiences quite a lot.
Primarily with relationships or in like life?
Just life, concepts. I think. Life, because I'm constantly learning, right? And I think we should always be sponges. Whether it's from your career, whether it's personal, whether it's your community, you shouldn't just be walking in the world attempting to tell your story. You should be listening to the stories around you, and that should constantly make you reflect where you're at and what you think. And I attempt to do that.
I agree with that.
Like my show, we talk about so many different things. So my show's on One Extra, as you know. Every person who steps through that door, I learn something from. And I become a better presenter each time. I am not an expert on life. I have opinions. I'm not an expert. There are times where people are like, brother, I didn't say that. Or, no, I think you're wrong on that. And if we're always willing to learn and progress, then, you know, we're always giving out something better into the world.
What are some of the most interesting topics you've discussed on your show? Talk a little bit about the show. Plug it.
Yeah, of course. So One Extra Talks, 9 till 10 on BBC One Extra every Sunday.
Do you get taught how to do that voice?
No. I didn't think I had a radio voice. I developed it by being on radio.
Is it? Because it's very clear. Like, yeah, everybody that's on radio, they have like a...
It's good mics as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, those crispy BBC mics are wild, you know. They make you sound good. Sorry, I forgot the question.
So did I. Yeah, talk about your show.
Yeah, sorry, I need to get better plug-in. So the show is basically a talk show. It's the only black-focused talk show on national radio.
Insert... bombs, yeah, come on, and ooh, everything. Ooh, here.
And we cover a range of topics through a black lens.
Okay.
So, I mean, Sunday we spoke about the monarchy, mm-hmm, and whether the monarchy should still exist or whether it should be abolished.
Do you speak about it or do you have guests on?
I have guests on.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who decides?
I'm impartial, of course. me and the production team, big up Unedited every time. They're behind the production.
Okay.
Fantastic black-owned production team.
Mm.
Big up them. Award-winning production team as well. They've won awards, all sorts. They're fantastic.
Love it.
Yeah, so we come together and we pick the subject matters together.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was this, if there was a conclusion on the discussion on Sunday?
Oh, no, it's balanced. We're impartial. We're on the BBC. Some people think it should be there. Some people think it shouldn't.
And do you typically pick someone to come on your show who thinks what you don't think?
It depends. So, like, it doesn't matter whether I think it or not. So, if you came on my show,
mm-hmm,
on your own,
mm-hmm,
right, and I agreed with you,
mm-hmm,
I would still be the person who doesn't agree with you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, if you're on your own, so it's always good to have two guests to...
Yes,
to converse with each other, rather than me having to play devil's advocate,
on
the show.
Yeah.
Because we have to understand the breadth of opinion and the breadth of a subject, mm-hmm, and the nuances, mm-hmm, inside, mm-hmm, that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if I come on, even if I agree with something, I'm going to be like, really, where did you get those facts from? Mm-hmm. And what makes you think that? And, mm-hmm, where does that come from?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're right, if you're 100% right in what you're saying,
mm-hmm,
then the more you're pushed, the more information somebody's going to be able to get to understand, mm-hmm, it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
If you're wrong in a situation, then the more somebody listens to it,
yeah,
the more they're going to get to understand that you're wrong.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what I think and feel.
Mm.
For me, it's about giving as much information as possible for the listeners, for them to make their mind up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to tell people what it is or not.
Yeah.
But one thing I won't argue about, and what I don't need to be impartial on, is things like racism, oppression, and all of that. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Does racism exist? I'm not arguing it out. It does.
Yeah. And is that a conversation you have to have before coming to the BBC?
Nah.
Or is that just like your general, naturally it's all of our general disposition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But how have you made sure that that's something that you don't argue?
I'm just open. And you don't have to argue racism. Like, it's not something you have to argue. You know what I mean? So I'm just clear. You know who you brought on.
Mm. So.
Don't sack me, please. No, just you know who you brought on.
Yeah.
And my show is just one of those shows that is rare in that the focus specifically on the BBC is the black community, is, mm-hmm, the black voice.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that we don't have to over explain because the listenership, and I think it's really good for the listenership, because,
mm-hmm,
they're not all black.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting a window into the conversation, right?
Yeah.
And we're not having to explain, well, actually, really listen to me because what this... We don't have to do none of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a black focus show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll explain a little bit, but we're not having to over-explain things.
Yeah, overdoing it. And outside of... Actually, no, I want to stay with this for a bit. What are some of the most interesting conversation topics you've discussed recently? What was something you think, oh, that was really good. Oh, I really like how that conversation went.
I feel like that about a lot of them. I always talk about the show. I'm very proud of the show we did on HIV.
Mm.
Very proud, because it's not something you hear often spoken, mm-hmm, about. We did a show on autism. I thought that was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Mental health show,
yeah,
I think was brilliant as well. Honestly, if I could go through them, there's so many great shows that we do.
Yeah.
So many of them.
I really, I like the idea of talking about like autism and some of those mental and then like spectrum discussions.
Yeah, and that neurodivergent show for us is really important, but the rest of the shows are equally important because we pass the mic to the people who are experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
I am not there with a bunch of parents of children who are autistic or, mm-hmm, family members.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there with people who are autistic,
yes,
and they are speaking about their experiences of autism.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, when we did a HIV show,
mm-hmm,
we had professionals on. We had a number of people who are HIV positive,
mm-hmm,
talking about their experience of being HIV positive.
Yeah.
We're not talking about communities. We're talking with communities.
Yeah.
That is so important.
Yeah. I think that's the essence of building community, exactly, staying in community, etc. Instead of talking with and talking to. Interestingly, from an autistic point of view, is there anything that came out of that conversation that made you think, wow, that's a really, you experience life in a very, insert word here, way?
It's difficult because I think you just do that with every show you have.
Mm.
Like, you walk away from that more touched than anything.
Mm.
Like, you come away from that show and you're like, rah. There's always something where you think, I never considered that. Mm-hmm, like, I'm so in my own world. Yeah. Or you walk away from those shows sometimes thinking, rah, I probably need to go and talk to someone.
Mm, mm.
Do you know what I mean? The people who came and spoke, I think what stood out to me about the autism show is how often people speak for autistic people.
Mm-hmm.
And how passionate autistic people are about their voice and their experience. And they don't often get the opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because they don't have a voice, it's because people aren't listening.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a completely different thing.
Mm-hmm.
People say voiceless all the time. Nobody on my show is voiceless. The problem is people aren't listening to their voice. Mm-hmm. And those are two very different things.
Yeah.
And the language underneath that's very important to
me. Yeah, agreed. And I think that's the same as being us watching a Netflix show. And it was like a talent show. This guy came on and he said, the judge, he said, oh, good to see you. You know, Americans are so extra. He said, yeah, good to see you, man. And he said, good to be seen, not viewed.
Yeah. Oh, you see? You see that?
And that, for me, is a similar essence to, like, good to be listened to as opposed to just heard. I definitely think it's that... taking the time to actually listen to somebody and provide the space to actually listen to somebody and to listen to understand, that whole thing of like listening to understand as opposed to listening to respond.
I put energy into it as well. Mm. Like, if anyone's listening that wants to be a presenter and interview people, do your research, you know, and put energy into that. I interviewed Ryan Coogler, right?
Mm.
Who obviously did Black Panther. Yep. And I spoke to him about, I did some research on his childhood teacher who encouraged him to get into screenplay writing and stuff, and she was really integral. And I said to him, you know, like, your teacher was really integral, and I said her name, I said she was really integral in moving you forwards. What does it feel like to be that teacher to other people? And he went quiet, and you saw his eyes fill up with tears, and he was like, yo, I need to call her. And when you do the research on someone and you don't just tune into those top level conversations, you tune into the true essence of that person, that is what makes a really good interview.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. If you're coming to talk about autism, then I really need to tune into autism and understand what it is and the nuances of it and how it affects people.
Yeah.
So when I'm asking you questions, I'm not just hitting you here, I'm hitting you here. That is so important.
Yeah, it's facts. Because conversation's about heart. Like, it's about heart first and then everything else second.
That may I say.
There's something to be said for the people in your life that hit you here.
Yes.
Who are those people for you?
Who are they? Interesting you talk about teachers. So we did a show and I brought on my primary school teacher, Mr. Johnson, onto the show because he was somebody who really believed in me in a way that... only my mum and dad did.
Mm.
So to have somebody who saw the intelligence in you and the gift in you, and he nurtures them, and he was Guyanese, and he really championed kind of like blackness, even though it wasn't part of the curriculum, we'd be singing A Message to You, Rudy, all of those kind of songs in assembly. Like, he really championed black culture and made us proud of our blackness.
Mm.
From when we were like 6, 7, we understood Somali culture. We had a young Somali girl in our class. And when she joined the class, we all learned about Somali culture. We learned about Pakistani culture. Like, the man was amazing. Mm. What a teacher. And because I got moved up, I was lucky to have him for quite a few years. So he's definitely one. My mum and dad, definitely those people. My sister, God rest her soul, she's definitely someone like that for me as well.
Deep condolences.
Yeah, thank you.
Deep.
My friends.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about what was life at 25.
Mm.
The same friends that were with me at 25 are the friends that are with me now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they've been consistently behind me.
Mm-hmm. How important is that?
For me, exceptionally important. Because as someone who has struggled with depression and anxiety from the age of like probably didn't realize, but maybe the age of like 17, 18, but really realized at 21, to kind of have people there that you know have your back constantly has been so important for me. Mm-hmm. Like my best friend has been by my side the whole time. Mm. Like, and reminds me of who I am when I feel like I'm getting a little bit lost, or I'm getting frustrated. Because this entertainment journey, when you're, it's not easy, you know?
Mm-mm.
It's not easy. And you're talking about bringing your full self. And even when you are bringing your full self, sometimes those pieces get attacked.
Mm.
And it makes you want to go and run and hide.
So yeah,
you
lean
into your childhood self, right? So having friends to remind you of who you are, and stop you from becoming, I don't think I'll ever not become myself and turn into a showbiz wanker. It's just not my personality, you know what I mean? But having those people around you to ground you when you feel lost is so important.
Yeah, I think it's, I can't even think of a word that it resonates for me.
Definitely.
The last conversation I had on the pod was about friendship. And I spoke to two women, Nina and Ruth, pick up Nina and Ruth, who are best friends, and they're part of a wider friendship group.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how important it is to have people around you that speak into you. And I think that language sounds a bit new age, but I think, and like affirmation sounds a bit new age, but I do think having friends with you that have been with you from the beginning, naturally that's what's been happening the whole time.
Makes sense.
Because you wouldn't remain friends otherwise. Like, it's impossible.
Yeah, you'll get dropped. I ain't got time for that. You're gone.
It's impossible. It's actually impossible. But there is a view that like not having friends from your childhood is a little bit of a cause of concern.
Yeah, but you said you are earlier on.
What you eat.
You are what you eat and you are who you're around. And sometimes what you were involved in when you were young no longer serves you. And to get out and to survive something, sometimes you have to leave some people behind.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never like judgmental of that, you know. There are sometimes people who have been in a really bad place in their childhood and the people who were around them in childhood weren't good for them and didn't care about them and didn't want good for them. And people recreate and they restart. So when people are like, oh yeah, if you don't have childhood friends around you, I don't trust you. I'm like, you don't know what that person went through. You don't know their struggle. You don't know what it took for them to rebuild. You don't know if they have rebuilt. I think we need to, rather than these online conversations that people have and it's all very sensationalist, add a bit of nuance, add a bit of care to the conversation, consider what that person's reality might be. And you said it beautifully in the beginning in terms of you are what you eat or you are what you're around. Some people don't want to be that anymore and that's fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. And even just in a less, in a more obvious way, they just might have like moved country.
Gone.
So like, gone.
Yeah.
Literally. So and I don't blame them.
Yeah.
I really don't blame them. So like it's quite easy to like just develop new friendships in a different place. And if you've moved young, how at 7, like even 14, even 18 maybe, difficult to maintain friendships across bi-coastal if it's when you're young, man. So I definitely agree.
Even
with
in a different borough sometimes when you're young.
Yes, yeah. Actually.
You're like, you're in North and I'm in South.
Forget it.
Where do I get the visa from?
That always happens.
Yeah.
That always happens. In the previous conversation, there's a couple of words that I wrote down on a sheet. And at random, the guest picked a word and that's the word that the next conversation will have a brief discussion on. So the word they picked is home.
Ooh.
So when I say home, what's the initial feeling?
Oh, my family. That's home. But you know, it's interesting.
Not to be too deep on, I think.
No, be deep.
But home means different things to different people. Mm-hmm. And our context of home changes depending on the situation that we're in. We spoke about house music. House music is a home for me.
Me too.
ironically.
Yeah.
One extra and talking to people is a home for me. Being in conversation with communities, my community, that's a home for me. My friendship groups, that is a home for me. So I have a number of different homes that make up the house of Richie Brave, you know what I mean? Or the houses. So
I like
home
that.
For me is anywhere that brings me peace or makes me feel at one with myself and others.
Yeah, I think that, and that was going to be my next question. What's the feeling?
It's just calm. or not. Like with my friends are home, right? Yeah. Like that is one of my, but it's very rowdy, it's very raucous, it's very funny, it's very dirty, we're very nasty as a group. You know what I mean? It's, but it's home.
Yeah.
It's home.
Feels like another part of you, right?
Yeah. That home is that place where you just, you feel like you can relax. Mm-hmm. Even if you're hyped outside, there's something centered inside mm-hmm. of you. You're not having to have any masks.
Yeah, home for me, not that you asked, but here we are.
I'm very curious to know.
Home for me, yeah, I think it's somewhere that you feel, like, I want to say peace, but contented.
Yeah.
Like, a feeling of, like, you know what? If this is what I had to experience for the next X amount of days, I'd be happy with that.
I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, I'll be happy with that.
I like that.
My friendship groups are definitely home. Definitely home. Yeah, I come from a group of women who are like exceptional.
Mm.
Exceptional. And I've often said that God has blessed me with a lot of things, but he was very favourable when he decided who my community was going to be. Mm. Dance for me is home. And I think that's where my link for music comes in, because I always describe dance as visual representation of what you can hear.
Yeah,
and
I
like
love that. Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
of that and my connection to music, it naturally just like, yeah, it's just vibration. It's just, I love it. What else is home for me? A good book, man. Like family, all of those things that you mentioned, but other things, a good book, an expansive space feels like home. Yeah. So, like, sitting on a beach and just looking out into... I love looking at things that look like they have no end because it makes me think about, like, possibilities in life.
Makes sense.
Like, lots of green space make me feel like home. My godchildren make me feel like home. Mm. Yeah. Are you a father yet?
No.
Is that something that you want?
No.
Because?
Not on it.
Interesting. I've never met a man that doesn't want
I'm
to be a dad.
I'm not on it, you know.
Why?
You know what? Like, I like my time. I like my peace. I'm a godfather to 7.
Okay. That's right? A lot of people.
So I get all the joy and then I just duck out. But like, being curious about what your children may look like is not enough to want to be a dad.
Of course not.
Do you know what I mean? So for me, I'd really love to know what my kids might look
oh,
like.
Oh, no, it's
they
not
look
enough.
Like me. But that's it. I've just never really... I'm a father to many.
Yeah.
And I'm all right with that, you know. Not everyone is meant to be a parent. And it might happen one day, you never know. Mm-hmm. I never say never, but where I'm at now, nah, like, I like my time, I like my space, I like spending money on myself, I like to travel, I like waking up when I'm ready to wake up. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes people think of children as this, oh, this is a nice to have, and when it's here, your life changes. I realize that when or if I have a child, my whole life is no longer about me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it is to some degree, but it changes.
Like, it's disproportionate.
I ain't ready for that.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever will be.
And I think it's very important that you're so sure about that.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. I guess as well in this age and stage in life where a lot of people are making those kind of decisions, thinking about that and getting into relationships and feeling like, oh, maybe over time, like, obviously we'll be together and, like, yeah, he might change his mind.
Nah, I'm... Jump. No, you're good.
That's,
no.
that's really... I think it's so important to be sure about that stuff. And I think love also, for me, like, deep, intentional love feels like home.
I agree. If there's children already there, I'd be good, though. It's really interesting.
Okay.
I've just never had the desire. I'm not like, you got kids, I can't be... I don't really mind that, actually. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about me being... Oh, I might have to unpick that with my therapist on Friday. Thanks. You give me something to speak about. But do I? Some people, if you're so sure, you would never question why you're so sure. Yeah, I'm going to talk to my therapist about that.
I think I'll pack it.
Yeah, we kind of did. And I was cool with it. I was still on a no. Do you know what also feels like home for me? Solace. I love being on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I go for meals on my own. I go for holidays on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I go to concerts on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the cinema on my own. I love being alone.
Yeah.
I love it.
Love your own company.
I love it. Oh my God, I love it.
I love that for you.
Oh,
I do. I think. I think more of us could do well with loving it.
Yeah,
more.
It's the best thing ever.
It is such a beautiful feeling. Loving your own company, not feeling like you have to rely on other energies around you to have a good time.
Dancing on your own.
Oh yeah, love it.
In your boxes.
Love. I mean, not in my boxes.
Not in your
but
boxes.
Love it.
Just banging on some tunes in your box. I'm just in my heart, like, love it.
love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. I love what home means for you. I love what home means for you. If you were to, for those people who are trying to find home, I was going to add an extra bit to that question, but I'm going to leave it at, if for those people trying to find home, what would you say?
Stop listening to the noise. We have so much noise in our life. People constantly telling us what home should be, what you should want, what success looks like, whether you want, not that you were doing this, but like people with strong opinions around whether you should have children or not, mm-hmm. or whether you should date someone who looks this way or earns this amount of money or eats this food or wear these clothes or go to this restaurant. Home is something you build from the ground up for yourself. Mm-hmm. Stop listening to the noise, because you end up realizing you've built a home that doesn't reflect you at all. Mm-hmm. Doesn't reflect anything that you like, anything you want in your life. It is what everybody has told you that you should want, mm-hmm. and you should aim towards.
Yeah.
So my advice is always don't listen to the noise. Figure out what the essence of you wants, mm-hmm. and build from there.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree. Before we wrap, what's something that you think everybody should know? It could be a new song, could be a book you've read, a podcast you've listened to. Oh,
don't ask me something like that.
A restaurant you went to, a saying you heard.
Everybody should know who Children of Zeus are.
Oh, they should.
That is, was going to take it deep. Everyone should know who Children, you see that last album?
They should know.
You see that song, For Too Long?
They should know.
Listen, my Spotify top, you know, everyone, and support UK artists and talent, man. Yeah. Let's stop with this myth that nothing ain't coming out of this country.
It's a myth.
It's a myth.
It's a lie. It's actually a lie, though.
It's a lie.
Yeah.
Everyone should know who Children of Zeus are.
Yeah.
I feel like I didn't answer any of the reasons why I came here today. You didn't. I didn't, did I?
Our conversation went like this, though.
You're going to bring me on again?
I am.
Let's do that.
I am. For a music bit.
Yeah.
And then this bit. But honestly, it's been a pleasure. It has been a pleasure. Apart from that's what everyone should know. Anything you want other people to know about you? Anything that you want to plug? Anything that you want to share?
If you're trying to employ it, no, I'm joking.
if you're trying to employ a diverse
talent, let me pitch for a new job. Hello. I want people to know that I'm a human being. Mm-hmm. Like, first and foremost, I'm a person, and I think people box you up a lot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I've got a sense of humor. Please, yeah. I can have a laugh.
I sense that.
Yeah, I need people to know that I am a multifaceted human being.
Yeah. And actually, I have one last thing.
Yeah, of course. Talk to me.
What if, I think I even asked Javita this actually, again. If God could answer one prayer for you that would take place by the end of the year.
Oh, I feel like I'm getting upset. Would it be a miracle or would it be?
Of course.
Bring my sister back. If God could do anything for me, and I know you shouldn't mess with somebody's destiny, right? But just bring my sister back and for her to be okay. Mm. I think that is where I'm at in my life now, that is the one thing I want. I don't care about my career. I don't care about my success. I need the other half of me back. And I'm trying to figure out this world at the moment without her. And that's so difficult. Mm. See if I could be granted anything. And I know it's a miracle and it wouldn't happen. But that is the one thing I'd want.
Yeah.
To be honest.
I hear that. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're done.
Thanks for having me.
We're done. Give me a hug.
Thanks for having me. Honestly, I appreciate it so much.